Steve Allwine joined us on the trip this year. Wanted to go and have an opportunity to contribute that way, and I said fine, and came along. Dari and I, and one of the young men, Paul Agundapi in Nigeria, joined us on our trip as well. We traveled and visited the outlying members and some of the good news readers in Nigeria. The trip we took was over 2,000 miles. Now that's not 2,000 miles, it's 70 miles an hour on the freeway. You know, there are places, the roads are divided and recently repaired, where you can clip along at 60, 70 miles an hour for a stretch. But there's also plenty of places, many of which you simply are going from one lane to the other, back and forth across the road, weaving in and out of the damage on the road itself, and where you're barely moving at all. 2,000 miles, we crossed 19 of the states in Nigeria, visited all three church areas, spoke in Lagos and Owerri, and again, many of the scattered members we tried to reach, some of which I've not had a chance to visit in their homes because of the distance they live out through the countryside. We did one Bible study for the Good News Readers as well. You know, I don't know what the cost per visit was. If you add up my plane ticket, the cost of the trip, Dari's time, and the expense of the trip, and you costed it out into the numbers of people who were actually there, you know, the cost would be pretty high. You could take this church circuit and scatter it over Nigeria, and it would be as large as the entire church is there. I mean, these numbers on our circuit would fill that nation in terms of who God has called. I don't know how high the cost was per visit. I think it was necessary. I think it was important. In the military, there's a very strong ideal that is phrased as leave no man behind. The soldier's creed says, I will never leave a fallen comrade. Now, if I was going into battle, that's what I'd want. I'd want to know that the men that I was going into battle with, that they would not leave me behind under any circumstance. That if indeed we were cut off, they would not abandon me. They would strive to defend me. And frankly, even if I died, there would be a measure of comfort in my mind going into battle, knowing that even if I died, they would take my body out with them. That they would take me with them no matter what. I want to read you a clip in regard to the military concept of leaving no man behind. I pulled it off the internet to try to illustrate my point here. This was written last March. George Bush was still a president because it refers to him. It says, 6 years ago this month, Petty Officer Neil Roberts, a U.S. Navy SEAL, fell out of a stricken helicopter during Operation Anaconda in Afghanistan. According to a Pentagon report, Roberts survived the fall, held off Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters for over 30 minutes, firing a belt-fed machine gun. The terrorists finally overran Roberts' position and killed him at close range after his gun jammed. Believing that Roberts might be still alive, U.S. Special Forces mounted two rescue attempts. Six other Americans, including two airmen, died in the fighting that followed. The battle finally ended with the recovery of Roberts' body, the evacuation of other casualties, and Air Force gunships raking the area with cannon fire. The effort to rescue Petty Officer Roberts typifies the military credo, leave no man behind. It's the same spirit that motivates the search for those listed as missing in action, a process that continues years or even decades after they disappear. That sort of heroic effort is providing closure for two more American families. The remains of Army Staff Sergeant Matt Maupin were recovered in Iraq last week, almost 4 years after he had vanished. Maupin, then a private first class, disappeared after his convoy was attacked in Iraq on April the 9th, 2004. He was subsequently promoted to sergeant, later to staff sergeant, because he was listed as missing in action. They had not actually found him. Sergeant Maupin, an Army reservist from Batavia, Ohio, was the only American still listed as missing captured in Iraq. Maupin's family learned of the recovery on Sunday with a phone call from President Bush. Half a world away, a similar search resulted in a final homecoming of Major Robert Woods. The Air Force pilot was shot down in June of 1968 while flying a visual reconnaissance mission over South Vietnam. Woods and his co-pilot, Captain Cornelius, were reported missing in the crash of their Skymaster. Their remains were discovered last year and identified by the U.S. military. Searching for missing service members is costly, time-consuming, frequently frustrating. Thousands of U.S. military personnel remain missing from World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And for the vast majority of those families, there will never be any closure. In many cases, their loved ones disappeared in areas where locating or recovering their remains was nearly impossible. There's simply no place even to begin the search. Some have even argued that the process is too expensive and creates false hopes among relatives of the missing. In response, again from a military website, we'd like to say that you cannot put a price tag on the final resolution of families of missing military personnel. Sergeant Maupin, Major Woods, Captain Cornelius went to war with the knowledge of their country would do everything possible to bring them home again. We have the same obligation to all military personnel who remain unaccounted for without regard to expense or how long it might take. That's hard to understand sometimes and from a civilian perspective, but the point comes back to, if you know they will do whatever it takes to recover the body, you can be even more assured they will do whatever it takes to take care of you when you're still there. It's an important concept. Pretty high cost. I don't know what the cost per body works out, but it's in the very high dollar amounts. I would want to know that my fellow soldiers would always defend me and would never leave me alone or behind or abandon me as they retreated themselves. Now the truth is, if I die and am buried, I don't really have that big of a concern as to what happens with my body in that respect. It's a matter though of propriety and closure for those who remain behind. It's the assurance, again, the way we treat the dead is a reflection on the respect we have for the living. We want to know that we will never be left behind. 1 Samuel, verse 31, verse number 1, is the death of Saul and Jonathan. I think it gives an illustrating thought here, good illustration. It says, the Philistines fought against Israel. The men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa, 1 Samuel 31. Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and they killed Jonathan, and it mentions his brothers, and they all died. Now the battle became intense against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. So Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword, thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. When the armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men died together that same day. When the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley and those who were on the other side of the Jordan saw that the men of Israel had fled, that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. So it came to pass the next day when the Philistines came to strip the slain that they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. They cut off his head, stripped off his armor, sent word throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim it in the temple of their idols, and among the people. Then they put his armor in the temple on the Ashtaroths, and they fastened his body to the wall at Beth Shan. When the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night. They took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Beth-shan, and they came to Jabesh, and they burned them there, and they took the bones, and they buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh, and they fasted for 7 days. Again, the respect that we pay for the dead often reflects on the respect that we have for the living. When God says, "I will never leave you nor forsake you," is that not even a higher standard than what maybe the military would have or what even we would have ourselves? God working in us, we should rise to the standard that He gives us. But He says, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." No one left behind. There's a prophecy that is in Psalm 16. Part of it is David's comments and his relationship to God and what he looked to. And part of it goes on to a prophecy of Jesus Christ. But again, in the book of Psalms, Psalm 16, notice how David describes his trust and his faith in God, that He's always going to be there. He'll always care for him. He'll always watch over him and guide his steps. Psalm 16. "Preserve me, O Lord, for in you I put my trust. O my soul, you have said to the Lord, 'You are my Lord.' My goodness is nothing apart from you. And to the saints who are on the earth, they are the excellent ones, in whom is all my delight. Their sorrows shall be multiplied who hasten after another God, because you can't depend on that God. He won't be there for you. You will be left behind. Says their sorrows shall be multiplied who hasten after another God. Their drink offerings of blood I will not offer, nor take their names on my lips. You, O Lord, are the portion of my inheritance and my cup. You maintain my lot. You watch over me. You guide me. You protect me. I am in your hands. The lions have fallen to me in pleasant places. Yes, I have a good inheritance. I will bless the Lord who has given me counsel. My heart also instructs me in the night seasons. I have set the Lord always before me. Because He is at my right hand, I shall not be moved." To be at God's right hand means you're under His care, in His protection, under His active guidance and control. Therefore, verse 9, and notice where the transition now points to Jesus Christ, who trusted in God the Father completely. "Therefore, my heart is glad and my glory rejoices. My flesh also will rest in hope. For you will not leave my soul in the grave," Sheol, hell, as it is translated sometimes. "You will not leave my dead body in the grave." You see, ultimately, the reason the Bible refers to death as sleep is not because we're actually waiting there semi-conscious, but because God is going to one day wake us up. It's temporary. It says, "You will not leave my soul in Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. In your right hand are pleasures forevermore." When God says, "I will never leave you nor forsake you," it is on that kind of scale. No one left behind. When Cain killed Abel, recorded in Genesis, God confronted him in the matter. And God says, "Where is your brother?" And Cain says, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper?" The answer is clearly, well, you should be. You ought to be. What were you doing? His blood cries out from the ground. Cain's, no problem to me. But it was. In the Bible, when God talks about a measure of righteousness and a measure of our fulfilling His will, it often comes down to, are you your brother's keeper? That's where the measure is often made. "By this they will know that they are my disciples." All will know that they are my disciples if they have love one for another. No one left behind. 1 Timothy 5 is reference to this in a very specific way. In verse number 9, 1 Timothy 5, verse 9. When the Bible talks about those who need to be helped, those who need to be assisted, who does it mention? It mentions widows and the fatherless. Now, the fatherless are those who do not have someone to look after them and protect them and guide their steps. And the widow is not just a widow because she lost her husband, but it is a widow who does not have the means, the ability to be cared for and protected in the same way. So yes, technically the widow is broader than that, but notice the context here in terms of those who need to have the keep, the care of their brethren. Verse 9, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number. The reference appears to be to a certain type of support or care, protection by the church. Be taken into the number. And why? And not unless she has been the wife of one man. Notice the conditions here for what is considered to have been a faithful member of the body. Well reported of good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, which doesn't mean she just showed up at the Passover. It's obviously accepting and welcoming people in a way that is hospitable and caring for their needs. If she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. Keep those who have kept others, those who have cared for others, shown themselves faithful in the needs of others. Those are the ones you want to make sure that they are cared for. Now, it makes a contrast to younger widows, which doesn't mean that just because you're not older, somehow you're unfaithful. So the contrast is to those who have not maintained the faith in the same way. Verse 11, but refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. So the context is also in those who do not show that the are not being their brother's keeper, are not showing faithfulness and care in this way. Besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, not only idle, but gossips and busybodies, saying things they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some have already turned aside after Satan. If any believing man or woman has widows, then take care of them yourself. That's the point. You take care of them. You be their keeper. Let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows. So the context is there are some people who need care, need protection in a specific way. And Paul says, help them, care for them. But you know what? They should have done the same for others before. They should have been their brother's keeper as well. So the Bible, many times, when it actually reflects, what is it in this life that really counts? And it will come back to, are you your brother's keeper? Has anyone been left behind, cast aside, ignored, not cared for or protected where there was need? You know, is it really worth it to go search for all those MIAs? To go find out if they languish somewhere in some kind of captivity or if somebody left them off to the side, even to the point to where until you find the bones, you're not sure whether they are alive or dead? Well, some would say it's well worth the effort. If you're one of those ones who was out there, I'd certainly want to know somebody was coming looking for me. We went to, again, Nigeria this time to see if we couldn't visit the people that we didn't always get to see. We did cover the churches, spoke in the churches, visited those areas where we had populations of people, but we spent the time. 2,000 miles in Nigeria is a trip that most of the people in the country will never make. Dari and I, because of the ability we've had to travel, have gone to areas of Nigeria that the average Nigerian will never see in their own life. They will go to the village, they will have access, opportunity to travel in certain ways, but they don't just travel through the country to see as much as they can to go where they may. Mr. and Mrs. Forson live in Abuja. Joseph Forson has served in the past, years back, in the ministry, served and is diligent, knows the Bible, and he understands how to teach. We have friends there in Abuja that came out of the Worldwide Church of God years ago as that area dissolved in Nigeria, so to speak, as they turned away from the truth. And so there was a congregation, I've mentioned them before, it's a Narrow Way Church of God. They are our friends. Their children come to our camp at the youth camp when we're over there. I say summer, it's the end of the rainy season over there. We had, I think, probably 8 of their young people with us in our camp program this last year. The leader of that group has decided that they want to affiliate with someone. I gave a sermon here about 2 years ago on where is the body of Christ? And the sermon I gave, it's on our archives, was in direct response to that group's pastor asking me the question and saying we would like to have the question answered and we would like to see it on in print. So I wrote a sermon, Where is the Body of Christ? And I had it transcribed, I think probably Frida maybe typed it up. Did you not? Somebody did. I appreciate whoever did it. It goes back a couple years. If you feel slighted, you can type up the next one if that would make us even. And I literally went over, I went to their church, I spoke on the Sabbath, I gave the sermon, and I handed the text of it to their pastor. Well, they didn't like the answer I gave them. It didn't seem to fulfill what it was the individual who leads that group, and I don't mean the pastor, I mean the one who has the money, leads the group. And so over time, they've chewed on that, and recently, before we arrived, they had decided to go with one of the hierarchical groups who is very unfriendly toward all of the rest of the church groups that we would know, and frankly does not participate or communicate with them at all. In that sense, we just lost our friends. Their children will not be at our camp in the program this year, because they could not be soiled, according to their leader's perspective, by associating with someone so unchristian as us. It is a very sad case. Do you think we needed to get up there and visit Mr. and Mrs. Forson at a time such as this? When we have a couple of young adults that are living in that area assisting, and when they will no longer be able to associate with other people that believe these same things as us, except for governance, where somebody has to have all power and authority and almost be God in their own eyes. Yeah, it was pretty important that we go visit them. It was pretty important that we kind of hold their hand spiritually and encourage them and say, you know what, you're not alone. You're not the only ones. We're all out here too. We're in this together. We're doing the same thing. You know, God will never leave you or forsake you. And you know what? We won't either, because we're in this together. We're doing the same thing. Going to Abuja from Lagos is probably a 9-10 hour trip. I've told stories of going into Abuja. Dar and I came in one time at midnight. Of course, the police wanted a little bit of a handout, and that's something we just said we couldn't do. And so usually if I say something to them, then they beat Dari up. They don't actually beat him up, but they were trying to push him in the car and take him and arrest him at the station. And that was the time I said, hold on here, let's go. You know, I got in the car and said, I've always wanted to go to a nice Nigerian jail. And they didn't want to arrest me because they didn't know who I was. But Dari, they figured, was a safe risk. But we've had some great times, Dari and I, we've been able to travel, and Abuja was one of those places. But anyway, we have people living there. Mr. Forson is now the enemy. You know what? I wouldn't want to be in a spot like that. But I'd even less want to be in a spot where I was treating God's people in a disreputable way, or leading God's people into a place where they should not be going. So it was important that we go visit the Forsons. Encourage them. Help them. Let them know that we are with you and we will be to the end, right? I think it's worth the trip. I think it's worth the time and the energy. We went to see the Omorodians. Now, the Forsens are in Abuja, and it's kind of north and to the east, and the Omorodians were in Nubusa, which is clear over on the other side to the north, but it's quite a ways out and away. They live in a Muslim area. They live in an entirely Muslim area, and they're a Christian family in the midst, and that is the only one there that we know of. Now you can say, well, why would somebody do that? Well, Mr. Omorodian, when he was in the Navy for Nigeria, and he had to exit the Navy because of some health problems, and he had to find employment in a way where he had skills, there's an institute there, a college, and also a forestry-type division, because there's also a game park up in that part of the country, and a large fishery lake with a dam, and it's all maintained by this institute, or at least in some relationship. And with Navy experience, they had some boats they used for various things, and he maintained those, and they hired him. And so he moved into an area, and of course, then God calls him into the church. So he raised his family in the middle of a Muslim, I would say more than community, a Muslim region. And they grew up, and they went to school, and they made their way, and they stayed there. Now, it's interesting when you talk to them, because some of the comment that comes up is in reference to the fact that, boy, can you ever leave Nubusa? How do you get out of Nubusa? Well, when you have an education and a job, the daughters are employed there. One of the daughters is the lady that I mentioned to you that took her doctorate studies. She finished the entire course, but the professor would not give her the doctorate until she gave him some favors. Special favors, which she refused to do. Do you think it's worth going to visit her, hold her hand spiritually, encourage her? When we would go to bed at night, the family, at least part of the family, would be over sitting in the front room, because we were in the guest cottage there on the institute, on the property, which they set up for us. They would leave after we would finally get too tired and go to bed. Then the girls, the ladies, would go home, and they would cook for us. And they would come back in the morning early before we got up and be waiting for us to get up so they could continue to fellowship, having already prepared our breakfast and our lunch for the day as we would be leaving. And so the breakfast and the omelets, sardine omelets, I love sardine omelets, are sitting on the table. And all the cooking is done. Now, they left at night late. It was probably after 11. And they were back early before 7. And in the meantime, they prepared the meals and cooked and brought it back and laid it out and were waiting for us to get up so we could visit again. Now, we spent one day with the family because the game park was half hour up the road, and we were able to go maybe an hour, but you could drive on in. This is not a Nigerian game park. This is not Kenya. This isn't the Serengeti. The animals are left are the ones that nobody has yet eaten. So there's some deer and some antelope in the game park. It's forested, and it's very brushy, and they burn the brush off in stages so that you can see out. And we did. We saw, now they don't call them, they call them deer and antelope, but it's like, they're African names, and they got different kinds of horns. But it's, you know, small ones, little tiny ones that's full grown, and big ones, and antelope that are bigger than some of our deer. And we did. We saw a number of them, but there's a river that comes through, and it was populated with hippopotamus. Now, that was a treat. You know, we'd go out there, and we're on the bank, and the hippos are, you know, floating around, and got a picture of one with his mouth open saying hello to the congregation, and we had lunch out there, and they fixed us lunch, and so it wasn't exactly a safari, but it was nice. But what was nice was we did it together. It wasn't expensive. It's not a tourist attraction in that sense, but it is some way that we could be together and walk together and eat together and ride together and repair our flats together and have the oil pan pounded out together from smashing it to where the oil wouldn't flow. That was great. You think it was worth it? As we were heading out, in the morning, the next day, we came in, spent two nights there. It's an area where I've never been. Dari has been there, but not for a few years. So it's not close to anything where we would be. But as we were heading out the next morning, went to the mechanic, pull the pan, pound it out, you know, get everything ready, fixed, change the oil, try to make sure we're okay. We'd had the tires repaired the night before for the road. And as we're leaving town, here's the Omerodians sitting on the side of the road with their car waiting for us to drive back out of town heading south, waving. I mean, they're just sitting there waiting at least to say goodbye. You know, I don't care what the cost per mile was on that one. It's worth it. No one left behind. They have to know that. Have to know that if the only time you're going to see anybody else in the church is at the feast, then maybe someone will actually come and see you one time in between. It was a great opportunity, a great blessing. We went to another area. It was after we left the Omerodians. Again, we were zigzagging and wandering, and Dari had laid out on the map. You know, Dari had a family member, a young family member, die the week before I arrived in Nigeria, and he had another family member die the week we were there. In 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, in tragic circumstances, a young child in one case and a lady that was 2 weeks from her wedding date in the other. And you know what Dari was doing? Well, Dari was on the road with me and us, visiting church members, doing Bible study for the good news. We cycled back through and came through the city where the lady that had died prior to her marriage by 2 weeks, and Dari's mom had gone up to the city because that's where she had grown up. It was her sister's daughter, and stopped and saw the family. Dari was comforting a church member who had a child that died as well. The day before we left on the trip, they had a child die, and Dar was over comforting them. So, you know, it does take a lot out of your schedule to go and do these kinds of things. It takes some sacrifice on Dari's part or the members that are there, but it was work that had to be, and it was scheduled, and it was timely, and we were there, and it must be done. And so he went on and did what had to be. I think it was worth it. I'm sorry for those who suffered in the process and around the sides, but we did what we could to reassure those who were there. Mr. and Mrs. OK, O-K-E is how it's spelled. It's OK. Dari would say, well, he'd show me the pronunciation, and it's always slightly different than what I would say, but it's fairly close. They had a daughter. If you remember the story, again, those that have been here for a while, that we went to do a Good News Bible study a few years ago, maybe two, and we went to a city, and we did the study in the morning on the Sabbath, and then in the afternoon we left to go visit a member family that was in an adjoining town. There was a political rally at the stadium. While we were gone, the president of Nigeria came, made some disparaging remarks about the opposition, and a gun battle broke out, and people were killed, and then there was a riot, and the cars were smashed in the streets. And we came back in the afternoon and didn't see that anything had happened at all. People were just walking away, filing out from the area. The hotel we stayed at was where some of the politicians were staying as well. The stadium was not that far behind where we had been. When we got up in the morning, Dari had gone out to get a battery, and he found out what had happened, and he just never said anything. When we got up in the morning, it was in the paper. So after beating up Dari and chewing him out for neglecting me in the matter, we left town. But this was the town where we had the Bible study, where one of the men showed up at the study and was put back in contact with the church. And the way it was he used to be in the Worldwide Church of God. And when that all broke up and dissolved, he was kind of marooned and left alone and went his way. And there was no contact, and he didn't know where the church was again. And after a number of years, finally he made contact with his old friend, Mr. Omerodian. And he knew where he lived, and he made contact with him because they had lived in the very same place all these years. And Mr. Omerodian said, well, the church is United Church of God, and it's right here, and here's who you can contact. And he contacted Dari and got on the literature. And when we had the Bible study, here's this man all by himself. He says, I am the only member in my family, in my home, and in my city. There is no one there besides me. And he was excited to be back in the context of the church and with the truth, with the work that was being done. So, you know, we went to visit him in his city. His wife a year ago had, I think it was a stroke. And it was a very serious stroke to the point where she was quadriplegic and could not even speak. And they had her on tubes in a hospital, and she could do nothing. And her husband took care of her. And because he had contact with the church now, members of the church also prayed on her behalf as well. One of the days through that course of the time, there was another member in the church. The member was Mr. Aladdin, I think, from what I remember. I'll mention him to you in a little bit. But he kept contacting Mr. O.K. and asking how his wife was and letting him know that she was in his prayers. Mr. O.K., again, was the only believer there in his family and in the city. And his wife said, because we visited them, right now all she has is weakness in one arm. She's rest of her is mobile. She can speak. She has one arm that's weak, and she's gaining strength still. And she is now beginning to believe as he does. And she told us, as I was there, she said, you know, it was the member calling to express concern and that he was praying for me. I believe God is healing me. She wasn't of the faith, wasn't a believer. It was the example of her husband's care and of a church member calling and checking and saying, you are in my prayers. She expressed that while we were there. So she is coming and following her husband's example, and he's not alone in the same way anymore. Also, one of the daughters came in while we were there and had questions to ask herself. So now, fine, we don't have a church there. We don't have a community of believers. But by one man saying, I am not going to go away, I am not going to quit, the wife has come to begin to believe. And now the daughter is asking questions as well. So we sat, visited with them, answered the questions of the daughter, and it was exciting. It was a rejoicing. You know, he came, he brought out the Good News magazine, and he laid it on the table. What's the current issue of the Good News? What's the current issue? January, February, okay? Current issue. This was the current issue, and it looked like an old rag. He had opened it and read it and pored over it and folded it and worked over. He read every word. Because that's all he has. There is no church. You don't go listen to the sermon. We bought him a DVD player while we were there. Dar went out and bought it, hooked it up. We paid for it with the gifts that some of you send when we go to Nigeria, those kind of options it gives us. They hooked it up, and Dar will send him the media. It's not like there isn't power from time to time, or a gen or a small one that he has. They live in an apartment. They have a TV, and they can use that from time to time. So now on the Sabbath, they can put in a DVD and watch somebody that will teach them so that they will be strengthened in the faith. They are not alone. We wanted them to know that. I thought that was kind of exciting, quite frankly, to sit there and look at that. You can look at my Good News. Looks pretty good. It's hardly ever been cracked because I have everything. I have friends, and I have my studies, and I have research material, and we do things. And tonight we're going to have a social. Today we're going to eat together. We have 150 people in this room, and the number 10 church in the United States is averaging about, on the high days, 166 or 7. That's pretty incredible. This is not exactly a backwater right here, right? We're very, very blessed. So his Good News magazine was absolutely almost wore out. And he would go over it and over it. And Dari said, you know, when Dari took his youth service, you go to college, 4 years of college, or 5 or 6 or 10, based on if the professors are working that year, takes time. But after college, you go in youth service for a year. And you serve somewhere at, you know, free. Government at least provides a place to stay. But Dar said he was the only person in that area. He was all alone. He said one time a teenage girl from the congregation in Lagos would write him, one time, I guess, on an ongoing basis. She would write him and just tell him what it was that they were doing. Well, here's what happened this week, and here's what's happening in the church, and the teens are doing such and such. She would just let him know what's going on. That's tone. He married her. He's like 9 years older than tone. So when he was in youth service, she was a teenage girl. He says, you know, it's very unusual for a teenage girl to just show the care. It wasn't a romance back then. It wasn't a relationship. It was a person just writing and saying, here's what's happening in the church. As she was older and he was older, he was able to ask for her hand. So it's amazing, brethren, that pretty clear in the Bible, God says, are you your brother's keeper? Well, the answer clearly ought to be, well, yeah, I want to be. I'm going to try to be. Is it worth it to be your brother's keeper? Well, I certainly hope so. You know, again, I don't care. There is a cost per mile on things that we do, and there are limits to what is available. But as long as it is available, it needs to be done. It was worth it. We went on to Ibadan. It was kind of late in the day. It was a long run. You know, when you go into Ibadan, the city of Ibadan, it's not like you just stop and drop off. Dari says, well, look, we don't have much time, but there's a man who lives there with his son. They're the only members in town. And we have a few good news readers, but they're the only members there. And the son is the one, Solomon, who took the camera, took the pictures at youth camp. Michelle and Derek would know who did that. But he goes to youth camp and he takes the photos of everybody and they print them and then hand them out. And so we wandered into Ibadan. The man met us downtown somewhere. We got in the car with us. We took him to his house. We sat in his house for 30 minutes. We left and wandered forever out of Ibadan through the traffic, snarled up, parked. We got in at like midnight to Dari's house. So, I mean, was it worth it? Well, I hope so. I certainly hope so. We cannot leave anybody behind. God says, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. And you know what, brother? Neither can we as well. When we send someone to some distant place on the earth by our standards, not distant to them, we come from distance from theirs. But when we go out there to visit and care for their needs and assist and encourage them, it's because God gave it to us to do. And we pray to God that He'll give us the resource to continue to do so. Notice Matthew 25, verse 31. Matthew 25, 31. It says, when the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then He'll sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him. He'll separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. He'll set the sheep on His right hand, the goats on the left, and then the King will say to those on His right hand, come, you blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And what standard does it now describe that was set and why they would be in the kingdom of God? I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. Sick, and you visited me. In prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer Him, because they didn't look at what they had done as somehow some spectacular thing. It was their life. It was what they were expected to do. But God said, when they said, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the King will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. He will also say to those on the left hand, those who will not be in the kingdom of God. He says, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Because I was hungry, and you didn't give me any food. I was thirsty, you gave me no drink. A stranger, and you did not take me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they will also answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you naked or thirsty or a stranger, sick or in prison, and did not minister to you? He will answer them, saying, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. These will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. So who in the church is expendable? What family member is there that we no longer need? Notice our commission, Matthew 28. Just turn over, very few pages. Matthew 28 and verse number 19. Our commission by God. Go therefore, Matthew 28:19, make disciples of all the nations, baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age, and you had better be with them always as well. You had better be your brother's keeper. It is what I have given you to do. Leave no one behind.